who's using some other cloud? Like, I guess SaaS is probably a big one. Using Google, Salesforce, something. Nobody. Nobody's used Hotmail. So assuming that most people are looking to move to cloud, this is probably a good one. Even if you are already in cloud and just too shy to put up your hand, this will also help as well, because I am finding a lot of people just jump into the cloud. It's this great thing that you can just put your credit card up, start using it. But I really feel like planning is probably more important than ever with cloud, whereas traditionally, you kind of knew it. There was a box previously. You found the best value box that's going to last you another 5 years to replace it. You put that in and you kept going. Not much really evolved in the last 15 years, really. It just got bigger and faster and more demand. With the cloud, though, you've got several different ways of doing things. You've got also different billing models as well. So you really need to think about how you're going to make sure you keep those things under control. So what we'll talk today about is, I'll be transparent at the start, just set you guys' expectations around what we'll talk about. Just do a general overview about cloud. We'll just talk about Azure in general, but not get too deep on it, because today we are talking strategy. We'll talk about many drivers and barriers I'm seeing out there when people are moving to the cloud, and also once they're in the cloud, what are they? What are some of the shortcomings and pitfalls that they're falling into? Budgeting is a big one. The change from a CapEx model to an OpEx model, how you can work that within the business so that IT can be working with the business and start really looking at what the business drives them forward and stop being this siloed off IT piece within the organization. Working out accountability. So accountability really will tie in with everything else that we talk about beforehand. And then finally, optimization. Really making the best out of the cloud, and then next steps, what you guys can do to actually achieve all this. So just for transparency, I do work with SoftChoice. I am very cloud biased. I've been working in the space for a long time. I don't just work with Azure. I do a lot with AWS. Obviously, it came out with cloud first, so jumped in there. And then once Azure SQL was out, started jumping in there as it evolved as well. So they are my areas of expertise, but I do come from a long background of doing Microsoft workloads in the traditional data center. So a lot of my work is that hybrid. I work with a lot of guys within our organization to help clients. Most of the time, we very rarely see a client want to be 100% cloud tomorrow. It's normally a journey that you're on. And so, I mean, there are those that come to us and say, we want to be 100% cloud next year. If you've only got 3 servers, that's great. That's probably achievable. But if you're in the hundreds or more, it's more likely to be a journey. Plus also, a lot of the times, even if you have 3 servers, you've probably vertically scaled it, which means you've stacked all your applications into that one piece. So re-architecting then for the cloud can be a lot more cost effective. And that's one thing that we hear all the time, is people take what they're doing today, which is vertically scaling, stacking as much in the biggest and most expensive server, and try to do the same thing in the cloud. And then they come back to us and say, the cloud was this promise of being cheaper, more nimble, more agile. And what? Why is it not? We actually found that it's more expensive. And that's exactly why, is because even in the cloud, picking the biggest and fastest CPU, RAM, all on one server is going to be a premium. And you don't need that premium if you architect things correctly. Well, most of the time, unless you're in multimedia. So today's objective, whether you're already in the cloud or you're looking to cloud, we'll look at improving what you're doing in the cloud today, or helping you strategize to get into the cloud. So just briefly, a lot of you probably already know this, but I do like to start off with this when talking about cloud. I've been surprised over the years, the different definitions that people have around these three terms, and it's also, there's a lot of marketing out there. I've just added the word cloud, but done nothing actually different besides marketing. There's also a lot of plays on these words as well. Database as a service, bare metal as a service. Bare metal as a service I like, because most of the time that's just colo, just rebadged. But there's a lot of as a services out there today. But these are really the core fundamentals, and really follows the NIST standards as well, which I think is good to like just level set somewhere. A lot of times I say to people, look, the cloud is just a marketing term to me. Really, I see it as another data center. Some people get scared by the word cloud. They think many different things. Is it going to automate things so I don't have a job? Is it going to mean a big skill up and I don't want change? I've been doing the same thing for 15 years and I don't want to change. The reality is that it is just another data center. You can, like I was saying earlier, treat it like what you've done previously. It's not going to be optimized, it's not going to be as effective as if you really embrace the cloud, but you can at least start there. You can start the comfort level there. Some of our clients, while their staff is skilling up on cloud, they start off with just virtual machines, for instance, and then start to evolve their knowledge, start looking at serverless architecture, where you don't even have an operating system to worry about. You've got platform as a service in the middle, where you're taking away even the middleware a lot of the time. And then really ultimately, SaaS is where you want to get to. SaaS is the ultimate where the billing model is easy. You're just looking at per user cost most often. And all the management, even the data, is looked after for you. It's just the end user now that you have to worry about. So, but these are the two that I'm always most interested in. Infrastructure as a service, most of all, because that's where I see most of the problems. And it's also where things are most variable. When you're looking at SaaS, it's cookie cut. That's the way it is. It's pretty rigid in the way, but that's also why it's so easy. On the other side of the spectrum, we're looking at infrastructure as a service where you have so many choices. So if we look at spending, and this is such a small piece of the IT pie out there, but we're looking at by next year, they're projecting that spending on cloud is going to double. And as you can see here, SaaS, this middle piece here, is really where people are spending most of their money. Like I said, that's ultimately where you want to get to. And it's probably the easiest conversation as well. When you're talking to management and trying to sell on moving from the solution that you're on today to SaaS, it's probably the easiest one that they understand because they're already using a lot of SaaS applications, probably for personal use. So it's a lot easier to understand. Whereas, obviously, platform as a service, it has its places. Whether you're a developer and you want to not have to install your tools for development anymore and want to just use them straight up in the cloud, or whether you're actually wanting database as a service, things like that. But a lot of times we've got to make sure the technology is compatible as well. Obviously, there's limitations for your software tools that are up there. There can be limitations a lot of time that you don't get, that you would get if you installed it locally. Same with databases and other middleware services. You might actually find that you have something running locally on a VM that needs to be right there connected. So there's some limitations there. Infrastructure as a service, you see a lot more growth there as obviously maturity in the market to actually move those legacy applications and the pieces that don't fit into the SaaS models. Those conversations will start evolving and we'll see a lot more infrastructure as a service in the future. So the drivers, why we're seeing people move to the cloud in the first place. We hear about this all the time about agility. Being able to jump up there very quickly, being able to just give you a credit card and have a solution up there. It's also the reason we're seeing shadow IT a lot. We're seeing IT holding back departments such as marketing and that, and they know that they can go out and get it tomorrow. They can go have more storage with Dropbox in a second. They don't really think about the repercussions of data sovereignty and security and access and things like that. So I've actually seen, actually saw one client about 5 years ago. They were using Dropbox and they just had all their file shares open and public. They didn't realize that those URL links, when they shared them out, anybody could access them. So that is the pitfalls of departments going around IT. And some of the things that we'll talk about will help set up a structure so that you can give confidence to those departments that they're not going to be ignored. You guys can be nimble and react to what they need quickly so that they don't go and circumvent around you. And also get a lot more feedback and communication to the business as well. So the business doesn't feel like IT is a bottleneck or someone that just makes excuses. So if we look about simplifying things, also like we'll talk about with the SaaS side of things, the house gets very simple, but even for infrastructure as a service, a lot more simple, a lot more, everything's software defined really. So you don't have to go troubleshoot something physically. There's a lot of tools there that you can jump out and start using. And then optimization, just jumping in there. Traditionally, you would buy a server, you find out, oh, we've had a downsize, or we're ramping up production even more. You're kind of stuck with what you've got unless you get more budget or things have to change, or you've got, like, not often that a hardware vendor will let you return pieces after you've purchased or start to use it. So cloud, you can actually be nimble and change things around to shape things around the environment and the business situation that's happening. So that's also important because there are situations as well. You could have a disaster recovery setup, which is costing you maybe a couple of $100 a month when you're not using it on cloud. But then as soon as you start using it, your costs go up while in that short period. And that might be something that you need to pass by finance to make sure that they're not going to get in your way when you're actually having an emergency and suddenly you have to do paperwork to get approval for more budget to have a DR in place. So there are contingencies and things that you have to think about and plan before you're actually in that situation. So the financial barriers, touched on before about changing from CapEx to OpEx. A lot of businesses, though, are finding that they're already changing to an operation expense model already. There are a lot of other solutions and practices and ideas in business that are going around now that really are starting to align to this whole way of thinking as well. And as we'll talk about a bit, setting some governance around that per department instead of IT being responsible for the whole IT budget and making up their own mind how they spend it can really help IT actually become a part of the business, which is helping in profits instead of just being an expense that comes up every 5 years. But in saying that, there are some challenges. There's different options. You've got SaaS, PaaS, and infrastructure as a service with their different pricing. SaaS often around users. Infrastructure as a service usually around an hourly or minute billing. And the price is always changing. So I have this problem in government a lot of the time, where government is wanting to have a SKU code for every single item. Now, if you were to do that, every single item combination of servers, networking pieces, traffic, things like that in Azure, you'd probably end up with thousands of different SKU codes, and then you'd have to be updating them all the time because the prices are changing. And also, depends on what region you're using, the prices change as well. So they could have some deployments, US, Europe, Canada, and those prices and dollars all change as well. So it can be a nightmare there. So finding your way around that can be a challenge. Accountability, so working that out from the point of view of IT technically, who's deploying things? Are you going to let departments deploy it? Are you going to just keep it in-house with IT but have some structure around that? But then keeping that aligned to the different departments, because that also ties in with billing. If you're going to let your different departments have a budget, then let them have some accountability around how that's spent. Don't just have IT dictating to them how things will go there. So optimization, again, keeping it around the business, that can be some challenges there. And a lot of the time I talk to clients about actually putting artificial barriers in place. So traditionally with a CapEx model, you purchase, you have a budget, you spend your whole budget, you get the best you could for your dollar, that's gonna last us the next 5 years. Now when you're got an OPEX model and you're getting billed by the minute, you could actually, if you've got your scaling set up to actually scale things out based on demand and usage, you could actually end up spending much more than what you would have traditionally, because yes, your end users are happy, but your finance department isn't happy because you're spending over your budget. So what you can actually do is put artificial barriers in place to make sure that that spending doesn't go over. So your users might be a bit more unhappy, but hey, you can throw out a survey or something in order to try to reallocate funds and budgets and give some justification around, get some feedback to say, look, there's barriers in place today, we can increase it, but we also need to increase the budget by this much. Then you can see the return on investment a lot easier and align this to the actual revenue that's coming in from the company for that. So doing things like that and actually being able to see what pieces, obviously if you had an Azure deployment, you had different departments using different pieces in Azure, you'd want to be able to easily break those costs out and see how that is charged back to those departments. So what we're traditionally, what we're seeing a lot of is the customer experience and managing risk are two big important things that people are looking at when they're going to cloud. And then the impact on business that IT is having. So traditionally, like we're talking about, you purchase your hardware, it has to last 5 years. And what we're seeing from the business is they're demanding more quickly. And IT just can't keep up. And so traditionally, it's been the bottleneck. What we can do with cloud is actually get ahead of the business. But the problem is, like I said, really need to start planning to make sure that we're keeping controls in place, whether that be for deployment, for security, for architecture, for cost management. So what we're seeing when the business really takes the lead and doesn't let IT is that there's no plan. They're just getting in there, they're doing it, so a lot of things fall short. There's also, because of this, a lot of pilots, a lot of tests. We see different departments with solutions that are doing the same thing, but by different providers. So there's a lot of wasted money, a lot of testing, a lot of pilots, proof of concepts happening. Then we also see a lot of DIY happening as well, because the cloud is so easy, it's so quick to get into. There's nothing wrong with DIY, but what we're seeing is once people get into the cloud, it's all easy at the start, but having that confidence when there's a situation that pops up, the skills and the experience around cloud is still very new to most technical people. And then also we're seeing statistically that 30% of companies that try to do it themselves and go out on their own fail in some way or another. Whether that's just that they fail to actually get user buy-in when they actually deploy the solution because it's not performing the way it should, or whether that's just when there is a DR situation or something that comes up later or future growth, they just didn't plan for it. They set up their network incorrectly and now they have to scrap it all and redo the network now that there's growth and things happening. So managing cost is the other one that we see a lot of. No control, no governance, no pieces in place. And it's actually what I'm going to concentrate on next is looking at how to manage that control. So we did a study last year that looked, interviewed, I can't remember how many, but a few hundred CIOs out there. And, sorry, just checking the time. So these are the results that we got back from it, was that CapEx versus OPEX spending, there was almost 50% of CIOs out there didn't understand or didn't feel like their company had a good grasp on how to handle that. Almost 50% again was struggling to keep the lines of business accountable for their cloud costs. Basically, what was happening was IT was having to pay for everything, and it was the Wild West. They're just going in and getting everything they want. Sure, users are happy, but the again, the budget for IT, IT department's getting grilled over why they're wasting so much money, and they have no way of coming back with, it wasn't a waste, this is actually bringing profits to the company, because they don't have that information. So to be able to go back and justify is pretty important. And then just having the tools in place. So a lot of IT takes on the idea that we've got the tools in place today, it looks after our current environment, why can't it look after the cloud? And they start trying to adapt that. For the most part, you can if you're doing traditional pieces like virtual machines and storage, but there'll be a lot of gaps in the information there. Unless you're using tools that are designed for cloud. The great thing with cloud, with Azure and that, is that a lot of the monitoring, auditing, tracking, those things are there by default and often with no cost. So over 50% have actually found that the cloud actually costs more than what they were told. I'm a big believer in showing worst case situations and pricing things out so that it's not looking like it's the silver bullet that's going to solve everything and keeping expectations set. But even then, sometimes it is a little bit hard to gauge, especially around network traffic. That's one of the things with cloud that's very variable. So a big concern out there all the time. But setting those expectations from the start, if there is a lot of planning involved and you're actually not just jumping in there and deploying things at whim, and we see that a lot where cloud is used as a stopgap. Maybe something's broken, running out of storage, it's an emergency, quickly want to get some storage into the cloud, start using things, tying in, didn't do it the best way, didn't actually have any planning or foresight into what those costs were going to be. That's where we see a lot of times where those little test labs suddenly become production, and then suddenly they're getting this big bill and they didn't realize, because it might even be that they've been paying on demand and they could have been making some commitments and save like 50% of the costs, but because there was no planning, no foresight, no projections of what their usage would be, they wasted a lot of money because they were just paying on demand costs for cloud. So this is what we've been seeing, is like the actual costs compared to what they originally budgeted without proper planning. It's double what clients have been paying on the cloud once they get in there. So you're probably thinking, okay, I've highlighted all these challenges, all these problems, how are we going to get over it? So if we have a look at a comparison when we're looking at budgets between the traditional CapEx and public cloud, really we've talked about like sinking in costs from the start, having that budget from the start and getting that in, but having an expectation that it will last a while. Now in reality, there are things with traditional that you have contingency budgets for, such as hard drives failing, maintenance, things like that. But generally, you hope that they're pretty predictable. But also here, IT owns the budget. It's a lot easier to take a big lump sum every 5 years, say this is the budget. If you are already allocating it out, it was just a, we have five departments, they all use IT, let's divide this by five, and that's the allocation for each. That's traditionally how most people have worked it out. With public cloud, though, you can actually start billing things towards projects, towards departments, third parties that are tapping in. Maybe it's customers. You want to actually see what their usage is versus your internal usage. Things like that. It's a lot more granular and a lot better tracking that you can do based on that. So you can have that consumption playoff. The variable costs are there, but The hope is that when you're paying more for cloud and you see those numbers go up, that department or project that you're tracking against, the profits for that are going to go up in line with that. If not, there's something wrong. Maybe you need to put some artificial barriers or something, but at least you've got that tracking in place to give you those red lights to know that something's happening. So we talked about before about taking what you do today and moving that to the cloud as is today. One of the common things is, and this is just one example of ways to optimize for budget, but a lot of times we see people just running their servers 24/7. And in a traditional world, that makes sense because you've already made the outlay. If you've got free space, may as well utilize it, may as well make the most of the hardware that's lying around idle. And maybe you don't need that server to be as big in CPU and memory as it is today, but you've got that extra there, you may as well just provision that for now and scale it back whenever you need it. With the cloud though, this is a lot of waste. As you can see here, this is mock chart here. We've got these peaks here on demand, but most of the time, we've got no real demand here. So there's a lot of money wasted here. Because things are, traditionally, you would have everything running at 100% ready for those peaks, but there's all this time here that you're paying for in the cloud where you didn't need to be running it at that level. So if we optimize the technology and solution that you're using in the cloud, you can actually start optimizing the budget. So you would set a base level. Maybe this is keeping it simple with just virtual machines and setting a base level of servers that you have to take most of the load. And then setting up rules, whether they're time-based rules, performance-based rules. We have some clients that they'll put out a commercial and they know that their website's going to get hit hard when that commercial hits the air. They don't want to have even a couple of minutes of delay where things are ramping up, so they'll have schedules and things where they're actually automatically boosting the provision between certain times of day, month, and then also on top of that, then scaling automatically based on demand. If demand on these servers hits 80%, ramp up another three servers automatically, keep doing that until it drops below 80% demand. But then also, you can scale down as well. So when these peaks are over, you can start scaling it back automatically so that once that demand's gone, you set up rules to say if it's outside of this time frame, like I was talking about earlier, about artificial capping of performance, you could say don't allow it to go over so many servers outside of this time. You could also say if the demand hits below 60%, start deleting servers. And that's another thing that we talk about in cloud is there's no more hugging of servers, there's no more naming your server after some X file or your favorite character of Star Wars or things like that. Every server is more like a serial number. You have no attachment to it, you have a snapshot, like a golden image of that server, and you're just replicating that out. As soon as you don't need that server anymore, it gets deleted. It often automatically you would set up to have that server deleted. So you don't really, there could be some servers that you never even see or knew that were even there until you see the bill. So this is really optimizing your spend there, where you're only really spending for these bursts in performance that you put in. So just to give you an idea, this is taken from a client's bill that we had running on Azure. They had started off by just running like a traditional environment, and this was their bill. We're actually able to bring it down to half that by looking at pieces that would save them money. And a lot of it came down to the way that they were scaling their servers. So you can see here, nothing really has changed. They've got 62 servers here, 62 here, but the cost has gone down a lot, and that's really to do with having a look at when they needed their servers and shutting those down when not needed. So their base load was a lot lower needed than that, but the quantity that they were ever using did peak at 62. So when we're looking at the cloud, traditionally you're looking at, like I said, 4 to 5 years. There's normally a lot of other costs you want to take into effect as well. When I'm talking to clients and they're wanting to do a comparison, it's quite often I have clients saying, I want to compare what we're paying today to the cloud. A lot of the times they're forgetting about things that are kind of hard to track and weren't actually tracked before because they were just needed. With the cloud, there's lots of things that you don't need anymore. You don't need to worry about maintenance on the hardware, no more failed RAID drives, no more going out at 2 a.m. in the morning to rush out there and fix whatever piece of hardware is broken. No more air conditioning, don't have to worry about those big electricity costs and maintaining a room. Real estate, I have a lot of clients that have big server rooms and they've re-provisioned them now. They've turned them into training rooms, or maybe it's into a kitchen, a sleeping room where staff can go meditate or do whatever, but because a lot of these rooms are soundproof, so do some screaming exercises. I don't know. But real estate and salaries are the two biggest costs for most companies. So to be able to reduce those sort of things, or at least redirect people's work to actually bring more value to the company's bottom line instead of just keeping the lights on, is very valuable. So what do we do? When I'm looking at clients' environments today, I always start with the applications, which throws people off a lot. A lot of people say, you don't need to know about my applications. I feel like IT often says to me in the back of their mind, you don't even need to know what sort of company I am. I just tell you the CPU, the memory, the disk, and you tell me the price for the cloud. If you go down that path, you're going to fall into all those pitfalls that I was talking about before. Really what I find when we're talking about optimization and getting the best out of the cloud is looking at the applications. Different applications are going to fit into the different buckets of infrastructure, PaaS, and SaaS. Also, if we look at when things run, if we just run everything 24/7, we're going to lose out on a lot of those budget optimizations as well. So looking at the applications really automatically starts making IT look at the business itself and trying to fit those things into the best pieces for the cloud, but also gets you talking to those departments that use that and start finding the justification for that spend. Doing assessments, this is really to do with planning, to plan these things out, looking at cost models, how you're going to charge back or justify the costs, get budget, and then finally get started. So accountability, I think, is the most important thing to make those things happen. So normally with traditional IT, you're doing a one-to-one mapping. But with cloud, you can break it up. You can break it up, get a lot more granular. And the tie to revenues can be very closely tied to that operational cost that you're getting out of the cloud. So how do we work out who's accountable for what? Well, there's really three areas that we see the best ways to really break this up. That's really the line of business, so who's using the applications, and get some feedback from them. It's also interesting talking to the line of businesses, trying to work out RTOs, RPOs, so your recovery time and your recovery points, the data for disaster recovery. Without having the department accountable and having a budget worked out for them, they're just going to tell you that they can have no downtime and no data loss. But in reality, do they actually have, if you're starting to understand how the applications work, how important is that application really? Are they just being lazy? Could they be down for 24 hours but actually can't lose any data because they can't recreate any data that goes in there? Or is it the other way around? Can they have no downtime but they don't really care about the data because they destroy it, or they don't really save it anyway? Finance, obviously we want to be on board with finance. If we're having bills every month that are going to be different, we want to make sure that they're on board with that. And finally, IT, making sure IT is accountable, deploying things and keeping things in check. The other way of measuring we want to do is normally by the customer. So this is good when we're talking about return on investment, revenues coming in. A lot of times it's coming from customers. The departments, talking again about departments, the applications that they're using, and the project. Maybe there's a project that you're doing. Maybe that's the way your organization works and works best to charge by projects. So how we get there? Well, obviously we can work out what we're going to be using. So a lot of times we find when we're working out what, setting up blueprints, templates, things that are ready to deploy for common situations within the organization. Working out who can actually use those blueprints, who can deploy things, what applications are running inside that. Can we re-architect things as well so that we're using many servers and horizontally scaling instead of cramming everything into the most expensive server out there? And how are we going to actually implement this? The controls from not only a process and workflow type way within the organization, but technically, who's going to be allowed access to deploy what? Do we need to change our IT teams? Do we still have them divided by database, virtualization teams, storage teams? Or do we start changing that up a bit? So this is a governance workshop. This is just an idea of what you guys could go through to solve these sort of problems. So really working out what they're deploying, the owner, so who's accountable for the build, the purpose, so what's the justification around this solution that's needing to go out there, who actually gives the okay for this to go off, priority. Now this one ties in, priority and operations really ties into your disaster recovery. So there's a lot of information here actually. I could actually talk about this for quite a while about how different pieces of this chart will actually help you down the road with other pieces. This starts at management and works its way down to IT, letting IT know that you're doing this as well, lets them understand where all this direction is coming from. So really, you can turn around to marketing and say, if they had their priority as low for this, you can turn around and say, well, why are you asking me for the most expensive DR solution that we have available, because we've templated our DR solutions and we're giving everybody a Goldilocks solution where you can pick the best, or you can pick the just backup, for instance.
Pan 2.
If it was low, why do you need zero downtime, zero data loss? That's our most expensive. And then it could be that they recategorize this, or it could be then you're into a discussion there about really finding out what things are like. So then, yeah, setting the net benefit to the company, and how often, how long does it actually need to be running? That could be 24 hours, that could be finance saying only the last week of the month when we do payroll, we need that server. So I'll skip over this bit. Just pointing out that making sure that there's a lot of great tools built into Azure, but there's also a lot of third-party tools that are out there as well to help you better understand what your billing is. Working out your budget, you might have an EA agreement or an Azure agreement of some type. You want to know when are you actually projected to use up all your spend for Azure. Then actually having tracking per department of what they're charging, so you can tag resources in Azure and then actually show by department what they're spending on Azure. Maybe they come back to you and say, well, we hardly use that. You can shut that down or you can make it a smaller server. And then optimization, making sure everything is running to its peak performance. So I'll just skip through here. So this is just something I'll leave you with, is we're seeing a lot of clients in one of these four categories. There's either those that are hesitant, They really need to start planning and looking towards what they can do around cloud. Cloud might not be the right fit, but just actually looking at it, making sure that you're not leaving opportunities on the table that you shouldn't be while your competition gets ahead of you. Cautious, so those that are cautious really need to create a roadmap to just get into the cloud and start using it. There's the cowboys that just get their credit card and start using things and run into problems later. Obviously, they really need to set out a governance workshop there, start documenting who's accountable for what, start looking at tools to actually monitor things better. And then there's leaders who normally turn around and say, I've got it all, I'm in the cloud, I'm already good. There's always things changing. There's so many, I just focus on cloud and I can hardly keep up with the amount of new features and products and price changes that come out every day. So that's everything. I just wanted to leave with just letting you all know about our community group that we run here every month. If you go to puggroup.com every month in downtown Vancouver, we run a user group there that talks about all things cloud. It's open to everybody, no cost. Just come in, network, free beer and pizza, whatever we've got on. So thanks for your time, guys. Yeah. I can give it to Dave, and if Dave's
Sure. So for the slides, we'll have we're going to send out an Eventbrite notice to everybody. We'll have once we get all the slides together, we'll put together a OneDrive link, and so you'll be able to download the slides and stuff. So that's fine.